hit the recording, and so that we have at least a conversation. We're on September 27th. I'm with the 1 o'clock group. And I was talking to Edie and to Julia. Let's just do a quick celebration of how things are going, and then we'll jump back in, Edie, to our conversation about taking aim.
Okay.
Do you want to go first, Julia?
Sure. So I am the celebration on taking aim. I am actually heard the last part of what Edie was talking about in terms of expectations, and that's exactly what I was going to mention. And my celebration is that I have finally decided to, when it's time to turn off any kind of screen, no matter what kind of screen, it's one more minute, and I've finally decided that one more minute is okay, which sounds really lame, but that I can give him one more minute, and like, you know, he's not disobeying me or whatever, that I can accept that.
Wow,
it sounds small, but it's a really big deal for me.
Yeah, because here's the thing: is that if you're not getting triggered, you can figure out, okay, so what, you know, what do I do with the one more minute? And you know, at our house, you know, we went from, you know, one more minute to just a sec is always what it was. You know, and so it's kind of like, okay, I need you to be specific. How much time do you really think you need? Pause for a second and think about it. Okay, I need 5 minutes because I need to finish off this particular video that's going to be done in 5 minutes. Or I need, you know, so there's so many stages that you can take that from, Julia, but it's a great step just to avoid the trigger itself to say, okay, it doesn't help for me to get upset about the one more minute. I can figure out how to manage it once I know it. That's awesome.
And we're all happier when I actually do give him one more minute and he's happier. And it really is just one. At this point, it's only just one. It is.
It's only one more minute. Well, good for you. Look at that. That's even a bonus. So in my house, one more minute usually means a half an hour, but I didn't have time to think about how much time it was. So.
Right.
All right. Edie, what do you want to celebrate?
Just so Julia knows, I'm Edie, and I have 3 children, an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and almost 9-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And my 9-year-old is the only one who has diagnosed ADHD, but they all have various executive function and speech and all sorts of sort of complexities. And I guess my celebration is really just going back to what I was talking about with Nell, my middle. It's just that we have really, she is responding to me in such a different way. She hasn't had a meltdown in over a week. She's had little mini ones and she's been bored and whatnot, but nothing major. And she has just been sort of relating to everybody differently. She's kind of reclaimed her inner nice child a little bit more than she had for a while. And that's really exciting.
Well, here's what
I know. And such a relief.
Yeah, and here's what I know is true, Edie, is that what we focus on grows. And so the more you pay attention and notice those moments, the more you'll see them. And the more you pay attention to those moments instead of the moments where she's not seeing her nice child isn't showing up as well, the more you'll see the nice child. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes.
And it's a great muscle to exercise. It's like a gratitude exercise, which is like, I'm going to notice and celebrate when my kid does well. I'm going to focus less on the stuff that I want to change or that she wants to change or that sort of thing. So that's awesome.
Cool.
We're talking about taking aim today. And so what I've been doing in groups this week is to have the conversation about the topic before we actually take aim. So if you guys will oblige me with that. And then we can kind of go through some specific examples with each of you about taking aim, about what's hard about taking aim, which is really kind of what Edie and I were talking about, Julia, before you joined us. But, you know, this construct is one of the things we teach so early on. And so you know, we use it every week. You know, every time we do a parent success system group particularly, or if we're doing one of the live call office hours calls, we're like, okay, where are you taking aim? And it's really important because there's so much complexity that goes on in our lives. And Edie, you were saying this earlier, there's so many different places to take aim. And so it's important to kind of just get our head around, am I taking aim on me? Am I taking aim on my child? Am I taking aim, you know, and the workbook talks about the idea of taking aim from a macro perspective and then taking aim from a micro perspective. And so from a macro perspective, I might want to improve mornings in my house. And so I might start with that macro concept, and I might need to get a little curious first to figure out, well, what's really going on in mornings? I know that we're having a hard time getting out the door in the morning, but where are the breakdowns? Where are the mud puddles that my kids are stepping in? What are the executive function challenges that are showing up? What's the emotional reaction from me that's showing up? You know, so you might start with a macro, go to some curiosity, ask some questions, and you say, you know what? What really happens is that my kid has a hard time getting out of bed on his own. And once he's out of bed, all things tend to fall into place. But if I can't get him out of bed in a timely fashion, then all goes to, the phrase hell in a handbasket, which is actually what's happening at my house with my older kid. And so I know that I can go back and say, okay, so I'm going to take aim on getting my kid out of bed in a timely fashion, which might be a more micro sort of thing. And then I say, what's the executive function challenge? What are some of the other challenges that are going on specifically with getting out of bed on time? So does a distinction between macro and micro with that loop in curiosity make sense to the two of you?
Yes.
Yep.
So the other thing that I always like to talk about when we're talking about taking aim is the idea of taking aim on the challenge rather than the solution. And this happens a lot with us. It's like as parents, we jump to solution very quickly. It's kind of like, well, I see that my kid has a hard time knowing what assignments are due. If they just use their planner, they wouldn't have a problem. So I want to take aim on getting my child to use their planner, right? And that's a really normal thing to do because in our mind, it like makes perfect logical sense. The planner would fix the problem. The challenge is that it skips over our kids' involvement in the solution development, and we know that solutions that are put in context are always more successful. And so we take a step backwards and say, what problem are we trying to solve? Okay, the problem we're trying to solve is that our child is, you know, we want our child to be able to capture the assignments. Then we can go back and say, okay, so what executive function challenges are getting in the way? What logistical challenges are getting in the way? And I would tell you one of the things I uncovered with my son, who when he was in high school, was that one of the reasons he wasn't capturing his assignments is because he had this one teacher who would holler the assignments on the way out of class. And when I finally asked Jacob, he's like, well, I was already thinking about the next class, and on the way out the door, I had my notebook closed already by the time he was saying something, so I didn't even have the opportunity to capture the assignment because I was so worried that I was going to be late for my next class. And so it doesn't matter how many planners he would have had in that classroom or whether he used them effectively. It was really something else that was going on, and we were able to solve the problem from that perspective. So, again, taking aim on the problem rather than the solution really can make a big difference in our ability to be successful. The other thing, AD, to kind of, you know, morph into what you were talking about is that there's sometimes that we're going to take aim on our perspective. And just stay in that place of, okay, what do I notice about how I'm reacting, or what do I notice about what role I'm playing, or how I'm seeing this situation, or what my expectations are in this situation. So it may be that you're going to take aim on the step before, which is kind of like how I need to stop reacting and respond in order to be able to go and help change this problem with my child having a difficult time getting up in the morning. So those are my thoughts. Starting thoughts on this idea of taking aim, I would love to hear from both of you what's coming up, and then we'll go and take aim with each of you. You can't hear this, but my dogs are both laying here snoring on the floor, and it's hilarious. Sorry. I like that it's distracting me.
I guess for me, it's as I mentioned before, it's feeling like there's so many things I want to take aim on and trying to just choosing one. It's choices sometimes bog me down, which is my own particular issue, but just trying to figure out which
So Edie, is it overwhelm, or is it fear of missing out, or is it afraid you're going to choose the wrong one? I mean, what do you think is really going on for you in that moment?
It's a little bit of overwhelm, just that it's hard to prioritize. And I think in the prioritizing, it's that I'm going to choose the one that's not going to be the most helpful one. That I feel like my kids are always sort of surprising me with the new challenge that they come up with, and that I'm a little gun shy about, you know, I'll focus on this, and then all of a sudden, because there's only, I guess it's that I have limited bandwidth, and there's only so much I can do, and when I'm focusing on one thing, then maybe some other things kind of get left behind, and I worry that if I'm leaving those things behind, they're going to turn around and bite us in the butt at some point.
So it's almost kind of like a scarcity sort of thing. It's like, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, something terrible is going to happen. Is there a little hand-wringing and catastrophizing in there too, maybe?
I think probably, yes.
Okay. So it makes perfect sense, because there are a lot of challenging things. And if particularly if something new shows up kind of out of the blue and you're like, holy cow, we got this going on too. We already have enough problems. We don't need another one. You know, it's naturally kind of get that trigger and go, okay, wait, maybe if I can get this one fixed right away, then I won't have to officially add it to the list or something like that, right?
Right.
Or maybe I can pretend that it doesn't happen, or maybe it's really not going, you know, it's that sort of, it kind of gets our attention.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, what mindset would help you, because you know, your kids are, under 12, right? So you've got younger kids, and you know that the challenges are going to happen, new challenges are going to happen every year, every month, every day. That's the reality. I mean, if you don't know that already, I'm going to let you take a deep breath and tell you that that's the case. So what do you need to believe is true, or what do you need to tell yourself? What's that new mantra that helps to say, you know what, I can handle this, or okay, bring it on, or here comes another one, or whatever it is that's going to help you to kind of stay in that problem-solving mode rather than the holy crap mode?
Yeah. I don't know right off the bat, but I will think about that, because I think...
What are some of the things that your head does say? You know, what do you, when you think about those moments, I don't know if you can go back to one, but give me an example of a couple of things you hear rolling through your head when that happens.
I mean, I think I leap forward into all of the ways that this particular difficulty is going to impact them for the rest of their life, which is a lot to think about at any given moment. I think it ends up feeling sort of hopeless, and like there's so many issues and I know on a certain level that they're going to be fine. My kids are really great and they're doing great and we're taking care of their issues, and in the grand scheme of things, their issues are not even that huge. So the reality
is, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, the reality is that they're fine, and they will continue to be fine, and odds are that their lives will be just great. So I think something that will bring me back to, you know, something along the lines of, I think, a better good enough is good enough. You know, just doing something is better than not doing anything.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you were working on stuff every day. I mean, it's not like you're ignoring it. You're not a head in the sand kind of mom. I mean, you're here, you're engaged, you're taking care of yourself, you're taking action for your family. And I think, you know, catastrophizing is a natural sort of thing. It's a lot of us, it's a cultural thing. It's like taught to prepare for the worst and be pleasantly surprised if it doesn't happen. I mean, that's often a family culture that gets passed down. And it tends to keep us in hypervigilance, which stresses us out, which makes it difficult to problem solve. And so the phrase I like to play with clients is, even though ... I'm willing to consider that ... So it kind of gets you, and it acknowledges that, you know, even though my child cannot sit still in church for an entire service right now, I'm willing to consider that by the time she needs to be able to sit through a class in high school, she will be able to manage her impulse control.
Okay.
Something like that, or, you know, it's just that sort of, Even though my child talks back to me and has a hard time being respectful, I'm willing to consider that he'll be able to manage it before he gets fired from a job.
Right. I think I can do that.
So what's your language that you want to tackle here?
I guess it's, just in general, because it comes up over so many individual little tiny things. It's, even though my kids are having problems now, I'm willing to consider that by the time it really matters, they'll have figured out how to handle them, which I think is nice and global, but is also very true about sort of all of the various issues, because sometimes it's disrespectful, and sometimes it's sitting still, and sometimes it's waking up crying, and sometimes it's, you know, doing something bad to the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Covering
so how does
their
that,
feet
so how
with
does
acrylic
that,
paint.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does that help you? So if you can get into that space where you aren't catastrophizing and you're willing to consider that everything will be taken care of at the right and perfect time, how does that help you to take aim more effectively now?
Well, I guess it helps me sort of not see every problem as a major, major thing that needs to be dealt with immediately, and or something that makes me want to hide my head in the sand. And so I can look at what we as a family, or we as or each individual kid is having a particular problem with. And so I've been focusing on Nell. I've been taking aim on Nell and her sort of sense of self as a nice child as opposed to the bad kid. And my son, I can just sort of think like, oh, yeah, my son right now is currently having problems managing his homework. He's not having problems doing it, but he's having problems making time to do it and focusing on that and paying attention to it and sort of managing his organizational part. And my other daughter, JoJo, is having problems managing her anxiety about time and getting everything done in a reasonable amount of time and not panicking about it, sort of budgeting her time and everything. And so those are things that I feel like, okay, I can take aim. Those are most directly, immediately impacting us at this moment. We're not having any sort of major family problem.
Okay, cool. Well, so let's sit with that for a minute, and then let's test how actionable it is. So, Julia, what's coming up for you?
I was thinking about managing my.
Oops. Having a hard time hearing you. Are you on mute by any chance? Can you double check yourself? Hello? Oh, I think I lost her. Are you still there, Edie?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
It sounded like she was breaking up or something.
Yeah, she may have just like popped back in. So let's go back and ask that question. So it sounds like you've got a place you want to take in with each of the kids. How does that feel as overwhelming and actionable?
I got cut off, sorry. Or my
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm
Sue.
Here. I guess it's I was thinking managing my expectations of my 10-year-old son, and I've been for years now, I've been like I feel like my probably my expectations have been too high, and I get frustrated and impatient and frustrated with him, frustrated with the school, you know, teachers. And my husband's actually been not doing this, but he's sort of decided on his own. He's like, you know, Max is the max, and he's like, you know, he still wants to play, and he still wants to do this and do that, and so he plays with him and plays Batman and whatever, you know, which is, and I, not that I don't play with him, but it's things that you know, school will always be hard for him, and it just will, and I don't know. I'm trying to just let him, like he is, kind of like he is who he is, and I need to do a better job of just accepting that.
So hang on a second. So this is a great example of, you know, it, figuring out whether this is something that's at the macro level or whether it's at the micro level. So it's very clear that at a macro level, you want to look at your expectations. The question is, is there work to just focus in on one particular area where you want to explicitly modify your expectations and change a behavior? Or is it really just about noticing and paying attention to those places for now where your expectations might be getting in the way of, you know, managing triggers or problem solving or whatever else? So where are you with that, Julia?
Whether it's
The question is, do you need to take it to the specific and work on a particular area to focus on your expectations around, you know, putting his clothes in the laundry hamper, versus I just want to take aim on watching myself and noticing where are the places that my higher expectations are in the way. Okay.
Probably the latter, because we do little, you know, I mean, I do little things. I need to be more consistent about it, but, you know, in terms of independence and that kind of thing. But yeah, more my noticing.
Mm-hmm. So if you were going to turn this into action, and so you're going to take aim on your beginning to notice and pay attention more to where your expectations are and how they might be getting in the way, how would you translate that into some actions for yourself?
I think there's probably times when I'm sure they happen all the time, but I'm blanking right now. Like there's things that would that I probably need to notice what triggers me specifically, because I'm just not thinking of the right example right now. But I know there's times when. You know, I'm like, oh, like, why can't you do that? And I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, you know, he didn't understand. He may not have understood what I said. I mean, as an example, because he has a significant language disorder. And like, so I'm like, and it took me a while to figure out that some of this was due to that and not attention and not, you know, not, it's not even, you know, it's what the, like the naughty versus neurological thing, only it's not neurological in terms of the way that ADHD is, but it's like he may not under, you know, I have to speak slowly, I can't use like the language I would use with my daughter always, and I just need to be really conscious of that.
So there's two pieces of this. Yeah, but what you're talking about is really raising your consciousness to it, and some of that is prevention and some of that is management, right? And so on the prevention side, you know, some of the things that is more reflecting, right? So it's kind of like at the end of each day to kind of say, okay, what happened today and where did I have great expectations? Where did I overstep expectations? Where did I get triggered? I've got clients who do trigger journals. I mean, those sorts of things, to kind of just really reflect and pay attention to that. The other piece of this is kind of really in the moment. And the question that came to mind for you as a potential is, you know, to kind of consciously ask yourself what's going on. You know, what is, WIGO is what we call it, W-I-G-O. So what is going on, right? So instead, before you do anything, you take a deep breath and you say, what is going on right now? You know, this is my kid having a hard time behaving like a 10-year-old. This is my kid having a hard time. This is me overreacting because it hit my trigger. This is, you know, this is dad doing X, Y, and Z. It's that sort of consciously asking yourself what's really going on and doing an assessment before you jump to action. Now, the hard thing about that is if we're triggered, it's hard not to jump right to action. But if you can create some space there between the trigger, it can make a difference. So what comes up for you as I say that, Julia?
A deep breath would be a good thing. I mean,
because the triggers, the trigger management.
I'm not sure I would, I feel like I'm tracking all kinds of things all the time, and the idea of, like, tracking one more thing is like, oh, my God. But you know, a deep breath should be doable. and that would probably help a lot.
So where would you insert a deep breath and how would it help?
But if there's something that comes up and you know, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Or, you know, or worse, actually more than one deep breath, a couple deep breaths and then like, you know, to think, to process it.
And to recheck your expectations.
Both that, you know, what he's doing and why, and then, like, what, you know, how I need to respond. Maybe five breaths.
So what you're taking aim on is your own expectations of your son.
Yes.
And when you get curious, you notice that it's that you tend to jump in really quickly, and so the solution you want to put into place is finding a way to take a few deep breaths to keep you in that checking your expectations mode. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So I don't know you well enough to know how hard is it going to be for you to start taking these deep breaths. That might be, if you're triggered, it might be really hard.
Yeah, and I'm quicker than I ever thought I would be at kind of responding, you know, and negatively. So I don't know.
Well, and we all get those extra, it's like when we get tired or we get worn down and overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I mean, our ability to kind of really do that is hard. Can I give you a suggestion for something that I've worked with that might work for a while?
Yep.
It's the do it all the time, because then you can do it when you need to. So if whenever somebody asks you anything or anybody does anything, before you do anything, you take a deep breath. So, you know, it's like, okay, it's time to brush my teeth. I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to brush my teeth. I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to answer the phone. I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to respond to my husband. I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to deal with a mess on the floor. You know, it's that sort of, you're doing it all of the time so that when you need it, it's there.
Yes. That's a great idea.
The other thing is to kind of have a visual cue. And so I don't know if you wear jewelry. I have a bracelet that I always wear. But if I'm working on changing a behavior, I attach the bracelet to the behavior change. And so whenever I notice my bracelet, I go, oh, yeah, don't forget. Oh, yeah, don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So having something there, and I do put, the other thing I do is post-it notes everywhere, but with a deep breath, and, you know, depending on where you usually have a hard time taking a deep breath, it might not be realistic to have a post-it note everywhere.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Yeah.
So which of those do you think you want to try?
I think they would go nicely together. So using visual, I think the post-it notes, actually, I've never used the, I mean, I've heard of those, but kind of, you know, something that you're, says on you sort of, I mean, people use rubber bands or whatever, but I think post-it notes to remind me to take a deep breath. And I have a big whiteboard in the kitchen that I put, you know, schedules or whatever, different things on that we're doing. I could put it on there too. And actually my daughter could use it.
that she could take a deep breath. Now that's a great,
mm-hmm.
you mean that she could take
mm-hmm.
a deep breath with you? Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's a really great thing. And we talk about this a lot, is that if we're taking AIM as a family, and you know that there's something you need to work on that's also something that your kiddo needs to work on, getting
yep.
agreement to help each other to do that.
Yep.
You know, so it's like,
yep.
Mommy,
yep.
do you need to take a deep breath?
Right.
There are times that my daughter does that to me, and I'm so triggered that it makes me more mad than when she does that. But I want her to do that because it shows that she's conscious of the fact
right.
that I'm getting triggered, and I want to be conscious. I mean,
right.
we both want to be conscious of when the other one's triggered. So it works, but it has its downside, too.
I can just imagine. Yeah, my daughter, who doesn't have ADHD, she mostly just doesn't – Her the one thing that we have that I've worked on together is sort of an emotional response to things. So that would be a very good, that would be the perfect thing for her to start with as well. We do it together.
Yeah. Trigger management is an issue for everybody, whether, you know,
yeah.
whatever your brain style is. It's, we all have triggers and we all have different levels of intensity in how we respond. And so I love the idea of working
mm-hmm.
on that together. And you
mm-hmm.
might consider bringing the other family members into it as well and see whether it's something you could all do together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. So what else about taking AIM or ED, going back to kind of you and your expectations and putting some of that into place?
Well, I just, as listening to that whole thing, it occurred to me that we do have a consistent family issue of everyone is extremely loudly verbally and or occasionally physically reactive when they get triggered. And so thinking about this, taking a deep breath before you respond is in fact actually a global, like a family taking AIM that everyone in the family could use to just take a pause before you react to what was happening. Was it intentional? Was it, you know, don't just immediately scream when somebody does something that you don't care for. So, in fact, that feels like a extremely manageable place to take AIM. And it's something that I can use help on and my husband can use help on and the kids can all do as well.
Awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So we've got a few more minutes. I don't know, we can either call it quits because it's a small group, or if you guys have something else that you want to ask questions about or get laser coached around, I'm happy to do that before we check out.
I think I'm good. This is Julia. I think I'm good.
I have one question, and I don't know, it may be, but as someone who has children who, like, so I have ADHD, and making schedules and having visual representations of what needs to be done is something that is extremely helpful to me and to all my children, but is not something that I am good at or able to really do. And do you have suggestions for what I can do to, because my kids really like knowing what's coming up ahead of time and having that kind of sort of certainty, and that makes our life go a lot smoother. But I just
when you think about it, when you go back to your executive, go back to that little six box executive function chart in the workbook, what are the executive function challenges of yours that make it hard to create a visual schedule for your family?
I don't. It's like I know in my head what needs to happen, and I can't somehow make it concrete on paper. That like somehow.
Is it about translating the idea to paper? Is it about getting started? Is it about getting it? You know, finding time to make it happen. So there's some time management stuff there. There's some implementation.
No, it's more about getting started. And getting started and like organizing it.
Okay. So do you have a visual of what the output looks like? Or is that part of it is kind of creating what it might look like in your head?
Part of it is creating what it might look like in my head. And I have tried. Anyway, it was such a relief getting my late diagnosis because I was like, thank goodness that it's not that I just have somehow missed the right to-do list, organizer, planner, whatever. That like, it's out there and I have to keep searching for it. It's me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so but hang on a second. So this is a great example of a place where other people's examples can help. So have you looked at other people's examples and not found one that you think would work, or is it just kind of even figuring out? Because the first step is kind of being able to visualize what you think it might look like. The second step is figuring out how to beginning to execute on it. So, what would it take to begin to create a visual image of what you want, or are you getting stuck on doing it right?
I'm getting stuck on doing it right because I could spend, you know, the rest of my life looking at other people's organizational things and going, oh, this is so beautiful, and wouldn't it be nice if that is what I did, and then I do that, and then, you know, all of a sudden. So there is some time management in there as we talk about it.
Okay. That's the question. So if I were to give you some homework, what's popping into my head, check me on this, is, find three systems that you think are easy. Just go pick them. You know, randomly go out, Google family schedule, and pick three that you think look good but easy. And try them as is and see what you notice. That's the homework that's coming up for me. What gets in the way of doing something like that?
Not a whole lot, actually. I think I could do that.
You hesitated a little. Were you just thinking through it, or was there something in there that you didn't grasp?
No, I'm thinking through it, and then the other end of it is following through with them, which is the other piece. But if I found one that was easy enough, then...
Well, and so here's the other thing is that I want you to set a timer.
And I could work on the following through afterwards.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want you to look at more than 10, and I want you to pick three of them.
Okay.
And just start with one. I mean, I think this is the thing is you want to – you're going to find out whether – because there's the first step in the process is creating a vision for what it could look like. And so then you have three examples of what it could look like, and that crosses that off your list of things to do. Then you say – okay, how do I get started on this? I'm going to pick this one. And tomorrow at 9 o'clock, I'm going to draw the chart. And then tomorrow at 1 o'clock, you're dividing it up into little pieces. And so instead of overwhelming your brain with, oh, my gosh, how am I going to put this in place, you're taking it in pieces and you're getting started on it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That may be as far as you get because you're trying to accommodate your own executive function challenges, and you identified two. One is being able to visualize what the end product could look like, and two is getting started. And so it may be that just working with those two things first will get you over the hump in order to navigate and tackle the next part of it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you're playing. You're not trying to get to an end point. You're really playing with this and trying to figure out, how can I do this? And maybe you draw three or four different charts and then you don't do anything with them. So you're really kind of trying to notice, you're noticing where you get stuck, and you're noticing what the obstacles are, and you're noticing where your executive function gets in the way, and you're noticing where your own judgment gets in the way. And that'll give you so much information. It'll really help you to figure out, what do you really do? How willing are you to take that on?
I'm very willing.
Does it feel manageable, or does it feel overwhelming?
It feels manageable, because I'm not trying to, like, I'm not saying, oh, I am going to put in place a whole new system. I'm saying, all right, well, I can look at these three and see what they look like and figure out where they don't work. And
yeah,
that feels manageable.
Okay. So let's do our closing questions. I think this is page 17. Is it 17 or 18, something like that? Somebody tell me who's in the workbook.
19,
thank you. So, four questions. What did I focus on today? What became clear? What ahas did I have? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So, jot a few notes. Would love to hear from both of you. At least an aha and an action item.
This is Julia. I think the takeaway is it's more about me than, and my response. I mean, expectations is obviously about me, but that I need to do a better, that I need to, you know, I need to work on my response, and then the realistic action step will be for all of us to work. We're all going to be in the car tomorrow for 4 hours. It'll be the perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
All four of us will be there.
The universe provides.
Know, and usually, you know, usually it's me and the kids, and there'll be all of us. So it's all of us, you know, I think working on taking a breath. I think that's a great action step, a family action step. F-A-F-A-S, F-A-S.
Okay.
And so my action step is, I have several, but at least one of them is the one we just talked about, which is looking at no more than 10 planners and choosing three to sort of start playing around with. And my takeaway, which is sort of for all of them, is looking at everything. I mean, pulling back from looking at the whole of it and saying, oh my goodness, my children are never going to blah, 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 or I have to implement this entire system today or whatever. And focusing on the small pieces of right now, this is what we're having a difficulty with, and this is what we can do to work on that. And right now, this is the three planners that I'm looking at, and we'll see what happens. And if they don't work, I'll deal with that when that happens. I'm sort of focusing more on the right now, this is where we are, and it's not forever.
Love that. Awesome. All right, ladies, how does that feel?
Good.
Good.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Good,
well, thank you. So, just know that there was an email that went out about selecting groups for the fall and starting, because we're starting the new group schedule in October. So make sure you pay attention to that email, and look forward to talking to you guys in a couple weeks.
Great.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.